I do think we can save the world with local food and local purchasing.
That was Aaron Bell of Tide Mill Farm in Edmonds, Maine, speaking in Bangor at the 20th Annual Peace and Justice Center of Eastern Maine Harvest Supper. Welcome to this Peacecast.us WERU Radioactive Holiday Special. In this Thanksgiving Day program, we will hear about the philosophy and practice of organic farming, the connection of organic food to peace and justice, and the story behind a coming new brand of Maine-produced organic milk. This is Eric T. Olson reporting. Aaron Bell and Carly Del Signori are the husband and wife team that own and operate Tide Mill Organic Farm in Washington County. The Bell family members have been working the same land in Edmonds since 1765. Aaron and Carly are the seventh generation to practice sustainable management of their woodlands and blueberry fields, and the eighth generation to produce organic foods from their farm. Their new commercial project teams them up with other Maine producers to bring organic milk under the Moo Milk label to local stores and supermarkets. Today's program was recorded for broadcast at the Unitarian Universalist Church on Saturday, October 3, 2009. Peace and Justice Center member Janet May introduces Aaron and Carly. Here is Janet May.
I was chatting with Aaron and Carly when they came in and saying, well, so what should I say? Because actually, I don't want to say very much because I don't want to take time away from them because I'm really excited to hear the things that they have to share with us. I can't, it's one of those things where I just feel like I've known them, I've always known them, even though that isn't true. So I'm really happy and I know you're going to enjoy hearing them. And here are Carly and Aaron.
Well, thanks so much for bringing some farmers up to Bangor that are from way down east. I think it's a really neat connection between peace and justice and local food, and I really appreciate that connection that folks are continuing and starting to link up, because I think local food is as important to peace and justice, as other more traditional, peace and justice activities. But I do think we can save the world with local food and local purchasing. I think we're starting to see more of that, and that's how we make our living, is off people who choose to buy local food.
I met Aaron at the University of Maine at Orono in 96. I'm from Maryland, and never been up north and wanted to really come to see this part of the country. There was a wildness about Maine, this image that I had about Maine, and I loved being outside and working outside and being in nature. And I guess that's what was some of the driving forces of bringing me to the University of Maine at Orono. And I met Aaron maybe my second week there. He was a sophomore and I was a freshman. I remember going down, and then we went down to the farm for the first time around Christmas break. There was snow on the ground, I remember, and it was just this amazing oasis. I'm going to pass around these brochures that his cousin took a picture of the aerial view of the farm, and we're right on Route 1. You have to keep on going on Route 1 all the way past Ellsworth, keep on going for another 1.5 to 2 hours, and you'll pass right by Tide Mill Farms, and you wouldn't even know that it was there, but when you drive in, there's this amazing, somewhat of an oasis of the water's right there, the ocean's right there. There's 1,600 acres of land that's mostly forested, but there's about 40 acres of pasture, and we're doing about 3 acres of row crops. And I just remember being incredibly welcomed by his family. This farm has been in his family since 1765. So our kids are 3 of 6 of the members of the 9th generation to grow up on the same piece of land. And Aaron maybe can talk about what it was like for him as a child growing up there. But I know I feel incredibly blessed to be there and be raising my kids there. They have 3 cousins that live right on the farm that are almost their exact same ages. And to see them running through the hay fields and helping to feed the calves and being surrounded by this community of people that love them completely and support them is a pretty pretty amazing thing to witness, and happy to be offering that to them, as well as our work for farmers. But the stewardship that it seems like the Bell family members have done over the years for this piece of land is pretty amazing, and I feel really grateful to be there continuing the stewardship in our own piece, which is organic farming. But maybe you can talk a little bit about what it was like to grow up there and how, you know, reasons why we're driven to farm there now.
Yeah, I think there is something important about a rural lifestyle and local food production, and we're happy that the ninth generation can grow up there, and we are raising three. We have three kids, and they have three cousins, so we have six young children on the farm that are involved in farm activities. We milk 45 cows. We raise 3 acres of mixed vegetables. We raise about 5,000 chickens, meat birds, in a pastured poultry operation. So all of our chickens and turkeys have access to fresh green grass every day. We raise about 15 pigs. And that sums it up in terms of our farming production. But all that is a whole bunch of stuff. And we sell about half the money we make comes from direct sales at farmers markets or within the local grocery stores or health food stores or buying clubs. And the other half of it comes in bulk milk sales to a company named Hood, who processes our milk and puts it in Stonyfield cartons. So it's organic milk. It's processed by Hood. Hood picks the milk up. We recently got word from Hood that they're not going to be renewing our contract, us and 9 other farms. So we're one of the 10 farms getting cut out of losing the mass market. So that only represents half of our income. And it's a critical half. It's a big half, just as big as the other half. But it's amazing to me that, you know, half of our income comes from direct sales. So we are selling quite a bit of our milk raw, unprocessed, locally. And that gives us a lot of inspiration that we can make a go of it in the easternmost county in the whole United States, the most economically depressed county in the Northeast. And here we are selling organic chicken, vegetables, and milk, and people are finding it, you know, in their budgets to afford, you know, what we offer, when they could easily go to the grocery store and find it cheaper. So that tells me that in the most economically depressed county, people are choosing this local food that reduces transportation costs. You know, the people get to see the way the food's produced. They're choosing, this is okay with me. This food production system is okay with me. I'm voting with my dollar. You know, here you go. You know, keep producing it, and I'll keep buying it. So we're really happy that our children, the ninth generation who grew up on this farm, can take part in that. And whether it's nurturing a bed of carrots or helping deliver twin calves or feeding calves, you know, what those children are doing are taking part in producing energy. You know, what we're really producing is this energy, you know, that we nurture humans with. So when you have a society that less and less of the children take part in that energy production and life nurturing, I do think you start to see some long-term negative effects when people don't know where their food comes from. They don't know how to nurture a bed of carrots or feed a calf or help a cow give birth. You know, I think those life-nurturing practices carry over to working with people. And if you can work with vegetables or animals on a regular basis and nurture life, and because that's what we do as farmers, we nurture life. We have to have cell division. We promote cell division to produce this energy, you know, this nutrient-dense food products that we have to have. So when you have children that grow up for, you know, years and years and years, seeing that and participating in that and getting good in that, whether it's with the vegetables or the livestock, I think you have adults that can work with people maybe better. You know, I don't know. This is my theory. My theory is that the farming generation, you know, I don't know where that was, or when we were more of an agrarian society, we had a grown society that was more perhaps in touch with nurturing each other, working with your neighbors, being more self-sufficient as communities. So I see us going back more to that, and you know, I think I'm optimistic overall about the direction we're going for local food, production, and I would carry that over to local philosophy. I mean, do philosophy with your neighbors, you know, at the farmers markets. So I was a philosophy student at the University of Maine, and had to give a shout out to all the philosophy fans out in the audience. So, I don't know the difference between conventional and organic philosophy. Have to check with Doug on that one.
We farm organically, and we've been certified organic from the get-go. We support MOFCA's work. But to me, it's more of a philosophy. It's more about how can we work with nature. I'm not like... 4 years ago, we had one lightning strike that took out half of our herd of cows. We had 26 Hereford cows. They were, of those 26, 14 of them were adults. 12 of them were yearlings that we were getting ready to harvest that fall. Of the 14 mamas, they were pregnant, ready to give birth within a few months. And with one lightning strike, it took out half of them, you know. So that tells me, you know, nature, you know, there is no compassion within nature. You know, it's this cyclical and these elements. It's what we have to work with. But we need to work with nature. To think that we can dominate nature is completely ridiculous. And so I feel like I'm always striving to see how these pieces fit and see how they all kind of, you know, help each other. You know, we are, I feel like, the epitome of a diversified farm, you know, and to be that diversified, we're certainly giving up being a complete expert in just, you know, raising carrots, you know, like I don't know everything I want to know about raising carrots because I'm also distracted by raising potatoes and raising tomatoes and raising chickens and raising turkeys. But we've chosen that because they all fit together, you know, the manure that from the chickens feeds our vegetables, you know, it goes to make compost, you know, for to become nutrients for the vegetables. The pigs, are their job on the farm is to root up new fields. You know, we have 20 acres of land that we need more fields. We rotationally graze our cows, so they go to a new paddock. After every milking, we set up a temporary fence and bring them out to a new paddock, and they eat that grass, and then they get moved to a new paddock after the next milking. And 40 acres isn't enough to milk 45 cows. So, you know, the pigs are busy rooting up this new fields, and their job is really critical. So I feel like all these farm activities definitely all play a part to nurture each other, and our job is kind of to orchestrate how they all fit together and do it in a sustainable and compassionate way, like we have. And we don't do it all ourselves. Aaron's family helps a lot, tremendously. Jane's watching our kids right now and probably fed calves with the kids this evening, and his brother Jesse will be, you know, forking in the feed and, you know, doing his round, shutting the chickens in tonight so that the coyotes don't come in and get them, and doing overall checks of the farm. So we have a huge, you know, a big farm crew. I have 7 people on a payroll for the summertime, and compassion is critical. You know, we harvest chickens every Wednesday and every Sunday, but we do it in the most compassionate way that we can, you know. And when you're taking care of animals and taking care of vegetables and working with each other, you have to do it with respect and compassion.
And when you can face that and teach your children, you know, your children know how to bring animals into the world and they know how to take them out of the world. They know how to bring vegetables into the world and know how to take it out of the world. And it's just this energy creation and cycle that is really behind food, that when you go to the grocery store and it's just another bag of carrots in a plastic bag that came from California or who knows where, you know, you're totally out of touch with that. So that's something we try to instill in the kids and in our customers, and, you know, people do find it interesting. And life is diverse. Nature is diverse. So we mimic our farm after that diversity. That's why we raise all the different crops, and they all have a place and they all fit together. And we stand a much better chance at success than we would if we were just raising a monoculture, because we can't compete with the Midwest. I can't compete with large-scale chicken producers. There's no way. So we compete on another whole level by saying, okay, we're going to be a small, diverse farm, and if you come to the farmer's market, you can buy your vegetables, you can buy milk, you can buy a chicken, you can buy a pork chop right from us, some ricotta cheese. We work with a local cheesemaker who makes ricotta cheese. And so I think it's that diversity and lots of times a dichotomy that makes something work. Being a philosopher, it makes me realize that it's a dichotomy that a lot of times makes something exist or makes something important. It's the differences between two things that makes a stark sensation in your mind. And I think that's where humor and art and love and a lot of human emotions come from, is the recognition of differences, irony. You know, that's the irony. All it is just an instant, you know, difference or a change of thought. And that's where I think that's where humor comes from. I was noticing that with my Holstein cows as I'm milking them. I'm looking at these black and white blotches on them. I'm like, you know, she's just sitting there chewing her cud. And I'm like, you know, that's really clever. You know, it's this huge contrast. It's this massive cow, like, you know, bigger. I can't even get my arms around her. And all she is a big picture of contrast, you know, like differences. You know, that there's a massive difference there. And that makes her more, you know, that makes her stand out. But I think she was teaching me a lesson of some sort, and I guess I was trying to describe it. I don't have the lesson figured out yet, but I'll keep working on it.
And then the other thing I can say is I encourage everyone here, and you. It sounds like, I mean, we had a wonderful feast from a lot of your gardens, so I'm sure most of you know how to grow food and grow it really well, and have been doing it probably longer than I have. But it is important. It makes a huge difference to go to farmers markets. And there's this new, there's buying clubs now is like another avenue that that small farmers can kind of tap into to try to give people in our communities access to our food, because that's one of the biggest challenges is accessing local food. You know, yeah, you want to support your local farmer, but how do you get their food? You know, do you have to show up at a farmer's market between these certain times, you know, and maybe what you want is there and maybe it's not?
Well, that's the thing. Local food is inconvenient. There's nothing convenient about energy. I mean, you know, you have to go out of your way for nutrition. You know, that's very important. You know, go to the farmer's market, put the buying club order in, you know, go take this extra step, shop around at the grocery store, buy local when you can. You know, that's all we're asking as farmers, is meet us in the middle. You know, I'll meet you halfway by producing as efficiently as I can and getting it out there. But if the consumer can shop around just a little, you know, maybe just take 10% of your food budget and spend it on local foods. You know, I think if people did that, there'd be millions more dollars kept in this state on an annual basis if 10% of every family food budget was spent on Maine-produced food. That would be, Russ Libby knows the exact number, but it's several million dollars that'd be kept in the state every year. So Carly knows there's a buying club that just recently got started here in Bangor.
Jane Livingston has information on that, maybe. I just found out that it actually is up and going, meeting every Thursday at 6 o'clock at the Bangor Grange. Is the Bangor Grange on Ohio Street? Yes, the Bangor Grange at 6 p.m. every Thursday is meetings for these local food buying clubs in Bangor. We've started four down where we live, and there's one in Calais, one in Lubeck, one in Machias, and one in Eastport. And every week, you know, I send out an availability list. You know, I work with buying club leaders. They then send it out to their friends, and they compile an order back to me, give it to me, and I deliver it to them every Thursday. So it's just another tool and another way that that people can access local foods. And it is confusing. You go to the grocery store, and these big companies have done a great job at their marketing and advertising budgets are huge. But when you start reading a little closer at those cage-free eggs, you know, like they might not be in little cages. So yes, it is better than the other eggs, but they're not living a happy life out on green grass. They're in a big building with hundreds of thousands of other chickens, just not in cages. So it is confusing, and I feel like these big companies do a good job of trying to mimic, trying to capture the hearts, you know, and these consumers that are trying to make a good decision, it is hard. But the best advice I feel like I can give is just find a local farmer and establish a relationship and try to get as much food from them as you possibly can, because it does makes a huge difference.
Anyone have any questions on I don't know, anything we've mentioned? We are in the process of, me and the 9 other dairy farms are in the process of creating a main brand of organic milk that will be a grocery store option. So that's what we're trying to get off the ground.
And it'll be pasteurized, and not ultra-high temperature pasteurized. It'll just be pasteurized, it'll be homogenized, and there'll be low-fat, skim, non-fat, 1% whole milk. And it'll be in the grocery stores. Hopefully, they're trying to get it in the stores by November 1st, but it probably won't quite make that deadline. But Hood is dropped the Washington and Aroostook County farmers. We got a certified letter in the mail that said, sorry, you know, it was great, you know, to do business with you, but we're not interested in renewing your contract, you know. And the cows, what's the name? Moo Milk, Maine's own organic milk. Yeah, so it's good.
Yeah, so if you buy milk at the grocery store and you want pasteurized and homogenized milk and you want to buy organic milk, please look for that brand. It's not there yet, but when you see it.
But it's an example of a community, you know, of like this solution. I mean, before our milk was bought by Hood, trucked to Oneida, New York, ultra high temperature pasteurized, driven all, you know, all up and down the eastern, you know, seaboard. So here's, you know, what seemed originally like a tragedy to get this letter and not be like, oh my goodness, this is awful. But then here's a solution that's going to be a million times better. You know, these farmers are going to be part owners of this company. You know, it's been a collaboration between the Department of Agriculture and MOFCA and the Maine Farm Bureau. You know, the truck driver is still going to keep his job to pick up all of our milks. It's going to be processed at Smiling Hill and in Westbrook, you know, so they're going to be able to add on and expand their business. Oakhurst is going to distribute it for us, and Hannaford's agreed to carry it amongst, you know, other independent health food stores. So here's this, you know, hopefully, I mean, we have a lot of optimism. It's not really off the ground yet, but it seems like here's this really wonderful solution that was so much better, that's going to be so much better than what it was before.
Well, we hope. It's hard to start a company, and it's hard to balance milk supply with demand. We're going to have to figure all that out, and we hope we can. But we just didn't have time to make the co-op option was going to take a lot longer, and it was going to be just a bigger organization to try to manage, based on some research that we did. So we formed an LC3. We have a board of directors. It's a hard balance for Hannaford's to work, to buy. Like, it would be hard for a local 2-acre vegetable farmer to walk into Hannaford's with some boxes of lettuce and say, hey, can you sell my lettuce? I mean, I don't, you know, they have a certain protocol that they have to go through. I don't know. I've never tried to market anything through corporate Hannaford's. We do sell some of our raw milk, Tide Mill brand, you know, our brand milk through one Hannaford?
Two
Hannaford's, but they're independently owned. They're not part of the corporate structure. And I know if we've approached a corporate owned Hannaford's and they said, oh, you have to deal with Scarborough, the office, and you have to have all this stuff, and it's a bunch of paperwork, and it's a lot harder. So I don't really know why that's so hard, but I have a feeling it's consistency. It's hard for a smaller farmer to produce consistent product all the time and always meet demand. I mean, we have some things in season this week. We might not have it next week, but Hannaford's allowed a shelf space for it, and then the shelf space is empty, and they have to find some place, you know, something to fill the shelf in. So I think it is a challenge working with a large chain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and it's a different mode than they're used to, which is ordering it through their massive supply line, which is the same supply line that takes it to Hannaford's in southern New England as it does in northern Maine, right? So when they're buying regionally from local farmers, it doesn't fit into that supply chain. So it's harder for them, you know. But yeah, if the market asks for it, like you guys did, then that's great that they responded and figured out how to do it. I think they want to do it. They want to make the market happy. Yeah, they want business, yeah.
I feel like as consumers, we have a lot of power for positive change by, you know, taking our dollar and using that for pressuring these companies and these stores to do what's right and what we want them to do.
A question was asked about the need to homogenize Moo Milk.
Homogenize just makes so the cream doesn't separate, because consumers, I guess, don't have enough time to do this with the carton. We wish it wasn't. I mean, I agree with you.
Right.
We
wish it wasn't.
Homogenizing does nothing for nutrition. It actually totally denatures the protein. I mean, you know, we're big raw milk fans. There's a growing amount of raw milk fans. This isn't going to be for the raw milk fan club. You know, this Moo Milk, it's going to be just to replace the national brand. Only this milk won't be ultra high temperature pasteurized. It'll be regular pasteurized. So in that sense, it's a little better, but it'll still be homogenized, the bulk amount. But we sell non-pasteurized, non-homogenized milk, and lots of dairy farmers are selling a little bit like that. So there's more of that in the landscape if a customer wants that.
To make ice cream, I guess, you need to homogenize. So that's like, I think they want the option. Not that there's going to be an ice cream brand anytime soon, but I think they want that option to be able to these other companies to be able to sell cream to some of these other larger companies if we can't do that, if the main milk company can't do that themselves right off the bat. So it's stepping stones. It's frustrating because I feel like I want it to happen all at once and I want it to be perfect, and it's not. It's definitely not, but it's a step in the right direction.
It does increase the shelf life too. Homogenizing it will make it not go bad longer for whatever reason, but it does denature the proteins. But Hannaford's wants it. Hannaford's is excited about it. They think it'll sell. They want this product. They want a main made milk. So they're excited about it, as well as AG and lots of the other grocery stores. And plus all the, not, I mean, we figure the health food stores are totally for it. I mean, they love it. We know they want it. So, and if you want raw milk, go to the farmer's market, find a local farmer and buy milk directly from a local farmer. You know, that's probably maybe even a little better. You know, but if you're going to buy it at the grocery store, yeah, look for this brand.
Well, to be creative about the way we've gone about doing things, and has opened up new ideas and a new way of doing things. Thank you.
The program you just heard featured Aaron Bell and Carly Del Signori of Tide Mill Farm in Washington County. Please visit peacecast.us or weru.org for links and more information. This program was recorded October 3, 2009 in Bangor for broadcast at this time. Thank you very much for listening to this special Thanksgiving Day holiday program on Community Radio WERU. This is Eric T. Olson reporting.